Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for joining me today. My name is Chrissy, and you're listening to Mental Illness Matters here at Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, and while we have been doing certain different shows, when I have co-hosts and we talk about different stigma, some of the stigma surrounding mental illness, today I'm going to do an interview kind of like I did last week with Melissa, and he will be calling in shortly. So I was just going to take a few minutes here to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that's happened this last week that I'm super excited about. First of all, I told you about the video series that my colleague Jody and I were doing on peer support specialists. We did our second official video on YouTube, and you can find that and listen to it at my Facebook page, the Mental Illness Matters Facebook page. And just go click on there and scroll down, and you'll see both of us, and we talk about peer support, how it's important, why it's important, and where the movement is going. Because it is going places for sure. And I also wanted to tell you something else that happened this week that I'm super excited about, or was super excited about and will be again soon. I went ahead and did one of the scariest things that I've ever done in my life, and that is I did a stand-up comedy open mic on mental illness and obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, I don't know really what prompted me to want to do this, but I've been talking to some of my friends that are going to be at the IOCDF conference coming up, and they're doing kind of an open mic thing, and they were like, you should get up and do something fun. And I was like, sure, I'd love to. And then when the reality hit that I was going to have to get up and try to do something funny, I don't know if you've ever tried to be funny before, but it can go really wrong. I know that from public speaking. When I have tried to do things in public speaking before and people didn't laugh, and then I thought, wow, and it almost ruined the whole speech. So when I decided to do this, I just thought, this could be a whole other platform for people. And then what I found was when I started creating the little bit that I was going to do, I'm probably haven't talked lately about what type of OCD I have, but I have pure O, intrusive thoughts, and it's a really, really disgusting type of OCD that isn't talked about a lot because the obsessions are really shameful and embarrassing, just create a lot of guilt for the person that has them. And so I put this thing together, and I was going to talk about all the different types of obsessions that people can have that are usually pretty scary to say out loud to other people, and I have a hard time even in public speaking talking about them sometimes. And the most amazing thing happened when I stood up to talk about them on this microphone in a comedic scene. It was way different. I didn't feel ashamed. I didn't feel embarrassed. As a matter of fact, I wanted to elaborate even more because I am in the middle of a huge storm right now down in Castle Rock, and so I just lost my call into the show, and so if that happens again, I'll just call right back. But there's a huge storm going on out here, so apparently it was affecting my phone. Anyway, so I'm sorry for that delay, for the moment of silence. But anyway, so I'm back, and I just wanted to say that I was super excited about what happened this week, and I think it just goes to show that there is no platform that we can't use as advocates for mental illness. I never thought in a million years, it actually was one of the scariest things that I've ever done, but I never thought in a million years it would be a way to get advocacy out for mental illness, and I was super excited about it and wouldn't mind every once in a while standing up and doing it again just to reach people out in the audience and break down the stigma. So that was exciting, and I just wanted to share that with you. And I just want to thank you, all my listeners, for whatever you do for your advocacy, whatever platform that is, even if that's just talking to people who are in need of help. Thank you so much for everything that you do and for tuning in today. I am excited to have the show and to have my guest on. And so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on right now. One second. Brandon, are you there?
I am.
Hi, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Chrissy.
So, I don't know if you heard earlier, but my call completely dropped in the middle of a storm. And so, if that happens again, just feel free to continue to talk, and I will call back in and let you know when I'm back on.
Sounds like a plan. I'm glad that we cleared this up now.
So, Brandon, I'm going to go ahead. I do have an introduction for you, but I just think it's so much easier and so much more personal to have my guests introduce themselves. So I'd love for you to just take a minute and tell my listeners who you are and what your passion is, and then we'll dive right into your story.
Yeah. So my name is Brandon. We'll start there. My passion is actually helping people understand what it is to be loved and have their identity in the midst of mental illness. So a lot of that is within church settings, helping people understand that they're still loved and valued and that they still have worth, and helping them deal with mental illnesses in constructive ways. Pretty much how I spend most of my time now.
Well, why don't you start us off and give us a little bit of background on your personal journey with mental illness, from the beginning up until diagnosis, and then where you've gotten today.
Yeah, I was 13 years old when I first encountered mental illness. I had no idea what mental illness was before that. I thought if you wanted to be happy, you were. And then I watched one of my family members bottom out with bipolar disorder. And at the time, I had no idea what bipolar disorder was or what it meant. But all of a sudden, he found himself homeless in Dallas, and he came to live with our family. And we started researching, what is this thing that just caused his life to bottom out? And over the next year or so, my mom brought him to psychiatrist appointments and groups and all sorts of things. And after a year, he was pretty much stable. When I was 14 years old, I went on a school trip. It was 10 days long, and my parents said that they put their son on a plane and a monster came back because all the signs of bipolar disorder type 1, which is severe highs and severe lows, all of that manifested during those 10 days. I found myself in a psychiatrist. Yeah, exactly. I think it was a huge shock for them. I was in the midst of it, so it wasn't. I think it was just normal for me because I didn't know what to do. I found myself in a psychiatrist's office immediately because my parents had just been through this with family members, and that immediately started 2 years of seeing psychiatrists every week and seeing psychologists, and at the time, the groups that were in that area weren't the best. They'd been through them with my uncle, so we just did everything that we could. I played drums to try and numb the pain. Basically failed out of school. I was in high school. And after 2 years, we finally found something that worked. So finally just held on to that. And it was the most amazing experience because after being that depressed, I was a suicide risk for a lot of that time. I was hopelessly depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Experiencing joy again was overwhelming. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a junior in high school when I got stabilized and then continued living and just kind of hoping for the best, and became a Christian when I was in college, and my life shifted a little bit because all of a sudden I started hearing things like, well, if you would have had enough faith, you wouldn't have had to take your meds. And if you really believed, this wouldn't happen. And I rejected that outright.
Oh, wow.
I'm really, really happy to take my pills every day. That they make me quite content.
Yes.
I'm a pretty miserable person without them, so I'll go with it. But it kind of opened my eyes that there was this whole group of people, and now I was one of them, that had this faith journey, and it didn't necessarily match up with what they thought about mental illness. And I ran into a lot of people who did desire the best for me. No one ever said things like, if you really had enough faith, you'd be healed, because they had some beef with me. They wanted me to be genuinely better, but the things that they were recommending were the things that would have absolutely destroyed my life.
Right.
So I started seminary a number of years later, and I met a friend the first day. He asked me what my passion was. I said, people with bipolar disorder. He said, I have bipolar disorder. And that was it. We were just a match made in heaven. He's on my board now, and he actually helped me start my quiet cave. His name's Stephen. And we just started asking, what can we actually do to help people walk through this journey well and understand how to take care of themselves? How do we educate churches with dealing with mental illnesses? And we made it, and we're actually productive citizens. At least we like to think so. How do we help other people experience that same thing?
Before we get into the My Quiet Cave, because I definitely want you to go into some detail about that and what that has to offer, I have a few questions about your actual story. So a lot of people get really confused when I'm talking to them, and I'm sure that you've experienced this too, about how the onset of our mental illnesses happen, meaning, some people think, what triggered it, or did you just wake up and feel that way? And so in your story, you said you went away to a summer camp or a trip, and then you came back a different person. Do you have any idea what could have possibly triggered your first episode with bipolar? And was it something that happened that summer, or possibly was it the exposure to the family member who had had it before?
Well, bipolar is not contagious. You're not going to pick it up by being around somebody who has it. But that was
I just meant, would that trigger you? Because I know that you can be triggered by trauma, and I'm sure that was traumatic to have a family member go through that.
Yeah. In some ways it was, in some ways it wasn't. My uncle during that time period taught me the finer points of bowling and watching football. But what ended up culminating is I was 14 years old, in the throes of puberty. That's already an immensely stressful time for people. I don't think anyone goes through puberty and they're really jonesed about how stress-free it is. And going on a school trip where I was away for 10 days, it was actually in England, so it was an 8-hour time difference. There were all of these stresses, and I think you put all of that together, and mental illnesses can manifest at, ages all over the place. And a lot of the time, there's a stress point or something that actually triggers the onset of those, and sometimes there's not that you can really look at. And for me, I can look at it and say, yeah, those 10 days being gone and experiencing a bunch of, it was my first time away from home for more than a day or two, and I was, thousands of miles away, didn't really know what I was doing, and I had teachers there, but it was still kind of a stressful situation. It was my first time away, and so for me, that was definitely a trigger point, and that was all it took. But that can look so different depending on different people. For some people I've known, it was work burnout, and all of a sudden they're in their 20s or 30s, and that's the onset. For some people, it's early onset, and they're in, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. So my story is just England, apparently, is bad for my mental health.
You definitely put that in the trigger book.
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit, Brandon, about what your symptoms look like and what they feel like and what that was like for you at the first onset.
Yeah, everything's been a lot different now. But when I was first diagnosed, I didn't really know that something was horribly wrong when I was overseas. I just started getting really, really, really angry. And it's like the color in the world started to fade. And nothing was exciting anymore. Nothing was good anymore. Nothing was worth anything. And I didn't really realize it was a problem. I thought it was just being in a different place and it was cloudy, or being in a different situation. Then over the course of the next few weeks, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I would hit these mania spots. My parents would say that I had Superman syndrome, where I was, my brain was running a million miles an hour. I was trying to solve the world's problems and thought that I could. And literally running circles around everyone around me and just causing chaos everywhere. It's not like I was being really productive. I was actually just kind of breaking things around me like a bull in a china closet. And then on the flip side, I would hit these incredible lows. I thought that I was the worst thing on the planet. My self-image of myself was, if you could take a piece of charcoal and scrape it against a concrete wall, it's gray and nothing to start. And then you just mar it. And that black streak, it's contagious. It rubs off on the things around it. And that's what I thought of myself, that I was worse than nothing. I was actually just this blackness that destroyed the things around me. And so my psychiatrist immediately labeled me as a suicide threat and said, hey, this is what's going on. You know, people like this a lot of the time don't last. You need to be really, really aware of this. You're speaking to my parents, and they tooth and nail for me during that time. To this day, there's still a lot of that time that I don't have the greatest recollection of. There's still big holes, and my brain kind of feels like Swiss cheese. I reach for those memories, and there's just nothing there but a big gap. But I do remember that feeling that there's nothing good in the world, and the lethargy, and then those manic streaks where I would just go on a binge of, you know, it felt like creative energy, but it was pretty over the top, for lack of a better way of saying it. And in my case, I have what's called rapid cycling bipolar disorder. They switched really, really fast. So sometimes those things would switch between depressions and those manic states multiple times a day. So I was always in flux and never stable and never really knew where I was going to be or what was going to happen.
And exhausting, I can imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah. And being in high school, you were just kind of hoping to make it through that class period or the next class period and then get home and play drums, because it was at least some way to get some of the pain out, because it just hurts so bad all the time.
Tell me a little bit about what you said, that you tried a lot of stuff and it didn't work, but then you finally found something that worked. Can you talk about what it is that worked for you?
Yeah. I do want to say first off that if you find something that works, do it. Because the most important thing is not necessarily the medication that's a silver bullet, or the thing that works best, or the thing that's going to unilaterally solve all the world's problems with mental illness. Because a lot of the time, those things don't exist. The important thing is take the thing that works for you when you find it, and then stay on that thing, because sanity is priceless. For me, that thing, we'd worked through dozens, it felt like, of medications, and we'd exhausted pretty much all of our choices, and we took a gamble, my parents and I. We asked my psychiatrist if we could be on an experimental program that was going on through the University of Calgary. They were doing research on a supplement formula to deal with bipolar disorder, and we didn't know if it would work or not. We took a shot in the dark, and for me, that supplement formula worked. And that supplement formula now is called Quiet Minds. And so I've been on that formula since 2001, and it's what works for me. So I can't say enough about it as far as it restoring who I really am.
Are there a lot of people that use this type of treatment for bipolar?
I know there's a fair number, but I haven't run numbers. I couldn't tell you that there's, you know, how many thousands or anything like that. But I do know that there are a fair number of people that try to use supplements and things like that. The thing that helped me is I was under observation from my psychiatrist. I was checking in with the University of Calgary all the time. I wasn't trying to do this on my own. I really had a lot of people who really understood this looking out and really trying to make sure that I was doing well.
Right, which is important.
Absolutely.
Not to do it on your own. I do want to say, I just want to compliment you on, I just love your descriptions of how it feels and just the comparisons. It really helps me to feel like I understand exactly what you're talking about. So I just wanted to point that out. I really appreciate how you've taken, you can tell you're taking a lot of thought into how you describe it. And I think that your way of describing it can really help people to understand exactly what it means to be in those spots, especially depression. Your color reference, absolutely, I understand that. But I wanted to move forward a little bit, kind of fast forward with a few questions for you. So you mentioned the church and how the church sometimes can be not as supportive of medication and things like that with mental illness. And I have seen this and I run into it. And I think that this is a huge discussion and hopefully a huge movement that's happening recently for churches to really start embracing mental illness and individuals that have mental illness and to kind of stop that archaic thought. Tell me what you think about the progression of the church and mental illness and how they're viewing it.
You know, it's been really cool. I live in Denver, and I have yet to come across a church in Denver that their stance has been medications are bad. When I first became a Christian, I did hear that, but I never heard it from pastors. I heard it from people who were just around the church. And that's still mostly where I hear it from, but I never hear it from leadership. I think is really encouraging, because when you have pastors and teachers and stuff like that saying, yeah, get help, that helps immensely. But I think that there's still kind of a culture within the church of, you know, do you really have enough faith? Is this a faith issue? Is this not? And it's not necessarily coming from the top down. It's just kind of in the culture itself. And that's slowly beginning to turn, and there's some great movements to help change that. Rick Warren and Saddleback Church launched Mental Health in the Church after his son's suicide to start beginning to make that change in bigger ways. People
sure.
like yourself are advocating for, you know, let's eliminate stigma, because if people aren't getting help, we're not getting better. And all of those things are really having a cumulative effect on what's happening in the church. So I see it more and more and more as a good thing. But that stigma is still there in huge ways. I've still met with people and they've said, you know, I'm really, really glad to meet somebody who understands what it's like to go through depression and this kind of stuff, but don't ever tell anybody that I met with you. And I'm really happy not to do that.
Oh,
I keep all those names confidential. But they're saying that from a position of like, please, I don't want anybody to ever know this about me. They'll change, and they won't think about me the same. They'll treat me like a problem instead of a person. And I think a lot of that fear still exists, even if it's getting better.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question for you, Brandon. What do you tell people? Let's just say if you were to encounter someone and they said something like, well, if you just prayed harder or if you had a little more faith, then you wouldn't have to. What would be your response? Because you've been in this advocacy for a long time, and I have too, and I know like that, like the first initial stuff was anger for me and like just some like defensiveness. But now what was your response and what advice can you give to me and to listeners on how to respond to people that maybe say some of those things that just don't really understand?
You know, normally I ask the person if they can meet me for coffee or something like that, because I think the most powerful thing in the world is stories. And your story with OCD, that changes people's minds and their and what they believe about that stuff. And you can, when you talked about comedy clubs earlier today, you can reach people and say, this is my story, and all of a sudden people have this relation point that OCD isn't, you know, what they saw on TV on Hoarders. All of a sudden it's, oh, it's Chrissy. I understand what OCD looks like. It's not this abstract thing anymore. It has a face. So normally when I hear those types of questions and things, I want to give depression or bipolar or mental illness, whatever it is, I want to give that a face. as people associate me or someone they know with mental illness and associate these are people that are trying hard to get better. This isn't just an issue. These are people who are striving to be their best every day, who are working through life, who they're, you know, competent and capable people. These aren't, you know, the fringes of society. That really changes people's minds. When we, in Denver, we had the Aurora Theater shootings just a couple of years ago, and those sentencings are going on. I mean, the sentencing is starting now, and we just had the verdicts come in. I remember meeting with a church in Aurora, and they were scared to death. You know, is this really what bipolar looks like? Because, I mean, the initial reports, as soon as it happened, was that it was a psychotic break. And there were this fear that this was this manic person with bipolar disorder who was going and shooting up theaters, and what is this going to look like? And I just met with him, and I described, you know, Mr. Holmes to him, and then described those feelings that I've felt, and then said, yeah, but this is me. And you don't feel any of those things across the table when you look at me. You just see someone who you actually want to help advocate in your church. So being able to break down those stigmas and tell the stories of, no, this is what mental illness looks like. It looks like Chrissy, who works with, you know, Eliminating Stigma, or Brandon, who starts a nonprofit to help all sorts of people and, you know, who can still live a productive life, and you can still have great relationships and all of those things. And so I don't think there's a really simple answer. You know, you could say, I'm sorry to feel that way or something like that. But it's so much more powerful to be able to say, no, this is the story of what this really looks like, and this is how you really deal with it. And the things that you said are damaging because this is actually how they influence this story. People need, people like me, I'm a wreck if I go off my pills. That's not going to happen. But if someone's in a place where they really are just listening to this person and believe that they have their best interests in mind, and believe that they're going to be right, we can make some pretty damaging comments if we're not informed about what's going on.
And I think that your point about telling the story is huge, and I feel like there's a huge movement going on lately where people are starting to feel more comfortable about coming out of, you know, the mental illness closet, because there are so many of us that were just willing to stick our necks out and go, can't take it anymore. It's time to, you know, help kind of on a peer level. And I think what you were saying earlier, which breaks my heart, but I hear it all the time too, is when people meet with you and then they say, oh, I'm so glad to hear your story, but please don't tell anybody that I came to you. I think that like the one message I want people to know, and I try to emphasize all the time, is that you would be so surprised if you really just did say out loud what it is you go through. Like, you know, one out of three or four people that you tell are going to say, me too. Or they're going to say, I know someone that's dealing with that too, and I could use your help. And I think that's, you know, what we just need to drill in people's heads is you are not alone. You may think that you're alone, and you may feel embarrassed, but I'm going to tell you, half of the population, you know, either has a mental illness or knows somebody very close to them that do, and they feel alone as a supporter as well. So.
Absolutely. I couldn't echo that more. I've never heard, in the last 7-8 years, I've never heard someone attack my story or anything like that. Or recently what I've heard is thank you for sharing your story. I didn't have permission to be myself until now. Or thank you, I didn't know that there were other people like me. And I think part of that is that mental illness for a long time is it fits into one of these us versus them kind of conversations, you know, and even in advocacy, we can do this. This is like, well, I'm on the outside and I can help you. And it's kind of, I can help you. It's an us versus those people who have mental illnesses. And that's not this conversation at all. This is just an us conversation. And I think that's really healthy when we can say, no, this isn't me from the outside saying, I can help you and you'll be so much better. This is me saying, no, this is my struggle and I get this because when I see the shoes that you're walking in, I don't understand those shoes exactly like you walk in them, but I've got my own pair that I'm wearing right now that look almost the exact same. And to be able to say, this is something that we all go through, and I mean, not everyone deals with bipolar disorder and not everyone deals with OCD, but we've all got our own stuff. And to just be able to air that out and say, yeah, I do want to get better and I don't want this thing to dominate my life, it's huge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, Chrissy.
I think that another thing is, and I'm sure that you've experienced this since you're working all the time with people with different illnesses, is Brandon, when I first started this advocacy, I remember thinking, I mean, I love that you made the reference to the F versus them, because when I would first interview people and think, oh, look, we're all in the same boat because we're all mentally ill, we just understand each other, I found out things about each illness that I was like, what? Y'all do this? What? I mean, you know, I had my own stigmas that I didn't even know about. And then all of a sudden I'd be in the middle of an interview and somebody would talk about cutting or something. And I'm like, oh, my God, only bad people cut. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden by the end of the interview, I was like, I'm totally educated about cutting. This is awesome. And I was, you know, I was so stigmatized about it. And so I totally get that S versus them. And I'm sure that you get the same thing. Like, the more you learn about illnesses, the more you're like, holy crap. I didn't know that y'all dealt with that.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the first time I met with somebody who just, he was dealing with schizophrenia, and we sat down and talked, and all of a sudden my mind is just blown because of all the stigmas that I've gotten, and it's been so freeing just to be able to say, no, we can just chalk that up to the word jacked up bunch, and it just is what it is. And
I know. Well, we have about a little over 10 minutes left, and so I want to take the opportunity for you to talk about what you're doing now. Tell us about My Quiet Cave. Tell us how it came about, and let us know what services you offer, and then after that I want to give like your vision for My Quiet Cave.
Oh, absolutely. My Quiet came out of this struggle that I had, and it came out of this faith struggle and then this bipolar thing that was going on. And Stephen had some of the same things, and a lot of that was kind of a joint vision together. And now he's in Iowa, so I'm running with that little vision that we had, and it's really kind of become something other than what we ever thought it could be. When we originally started My Quiet Cave, we thought it was going to be a blog, and it's pretty much everything but a blog now. So along the way, we started mentoring people, doing all sorts of things, just asking how can we help people with mental illness experience life to the greatest extent. And I'm not a psychiatrist or a therapist, but I'm somebody who gets it, right? I've got my shoes on that look like a lot of other people's shoes that have mental illness. So we started asking, what are the things that really matter? And certain topics kept coming up again and again and again. And among those things were self-care and identity. And self-care was, do you actually take care of yourself in a way that's actually going to help you get better? And we'd ask people that again and again and again. And everyone that we talked to seemed to be the best person as far as taking care of themselves the world had ever seen. Until we actually started asking the right questions. So every person said, yeah, I take fantastic care of myself. And then we'd ask, so great, how much sleep did you get last night? And there was silence on the other end.
Exactly. I totally get that.
And then... yeah, and then we'd ask, so do you keep your blood sugar fairly stable so that your meds will digest well? So do you eat, you know, 3-4 quality meals a day? And then there was silence. And then we'd say, so, you know, do you keep the binges? You know, if you're, you know, whether it's caffeine, alcohol, whatever it is, you're talking uppers, downers, do you keep the binges on those things at a low? Because, you know, a drink or a cup of coffee is not going to kill you. You'll probably be just fine. But if you're doing 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of those at one time, that's probably going to affect your meds in some really bad ways. And there was silence on the other side.
There's not only silence, that, but then there's a dial tone.
Yeah, yeah. You don't run my life. And that's true. I don't run their life. But it might be easier for them if I did in that moment, because I would probably stop the binging and tell them to go to bed at a decent hour. And a lot of it has to deal with the fact that in some ways I run my life like a 9-year-old. And I really take a lot of pride in that, actually. That, you know, 10 o'clock comes around,
I love it,
and I'm headed to bed, and it's great. And there's exceptions to that rule every once in a while, but for the most part, there's not. And I get my 8 hours of sleep a night, and that helps. And I eat 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day, and that's great. And I can't remember the last time I missed a dose of my meds, because it's been years and years. And I know a lot of people who look at that and say, like, why do you do this? Especially like in grad school, you know, people pull all-nighters to write papers. I had my paper written last week. You know, what are you doing? And it's, I really care about being a person tomorrow. And mm-hmm. I'm going to do my best to make sure that when I get up tomorrow morning, I can still be me. And
right. That's
kind of, when you put it in that kind of a context, that mental illness, being well, does cost you something. And self-care
yes.
is the thing that it costs you. And therapy mm-hmm. and psychiatry and all of those things are immensely beneficial. And those are the costs of being well. And
mm-hmm.
for me, and, you know, I've been married for 8 years and I've got a mortgage and I run a nonprofit. If I want to have the life that I have, there are some things I need to do. And for me, I've made the choice that, yes, absolutely, I'll do these things. So with my Quiet Kid, we started teaching people how to do self-care. And it was remarkable. All of a sudden, people started doing better. And then the second
wow.
thing that we started hearing again and again and again was identity. That we'd ask
yes.
people, so, you know, what does God think of you? And every person would say, well, God loves me. And then we'd say, great, well, what do you think about what God thinks of you? And we almost unilaterally got the same answer, which was, God's so disappointed in me. Or God's
yes.
angry at me. And we're like, no, like, where does this break down? You believe, you just said God loves you, and now you believe that you're this awful piece of crap. And one of these things is true, and one of them's not. But we need to break down what it is, why is it that you believe this stuff? And for the most part, we found out that people had this works-based religion where they believed that if they didn't hold up their end of the deal, God was going to be pissed at them, and they were never going to be good enough. Or if they somehow weren't right, that means that God's favor wasn't on them, and they were a disappointment, and God's favor had left them, and it was never going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So we started working on identity. Along the way, we met some amazing counselors, Becky Newquist over at Bethel Counseling, Barb Torgerson, who at Torgerson Therapy, helped us start putting together classes and groups. Out of that came a class called Overcome, which is an 8-week class that we teach in churches on finding hope in the midst of mental illness. And it's all about, great, you're seeing go see your counselor, go see your psychiatrist, and we're going to actually deal with issues of, like, how do you take care of yourself, and what does it mean to be human, and how do you advocate for yourself? How do you build a support network of people who you can call at 2 o'clock in the morning if you're having a really bad day? Because those things
right.
still happen. And then we had a bunch of people go through that, and they had amazing results. And then they started saying, so what's next? Because we didn't have anything for them after that class. So we came up with this idea called cave groups, which are just open groups that you can drop into at any point in time. They're for anybody who has a mental illness or anyone who's supporting somebody who does. And the whole idea is we're going to gather together, we're going to pray together, and we're going to talk through how do we actually be fully who we are, and we're going to talk about some element of that. Like, what does it mean to experience freedom? What does it mean to actually advocate for yourself? What does it mean to be honest about your relationships? What does it look like to form healthy connection? And we talk about those things in group under the idea that people will get better in mental illness, and we talk about it. So that's basically what we do now, is we do groups Overcome at a number of different churches every semester, And if you ever want to find out where we're running those groups, we're finalizing those groups for the fall. But all of those are on our website, myquietcave.com/events. You can find all of those. And then if you're interested in a cave group, right now the only one going on over the summer is at Denver Community Church, but a couple more are launching this fall. And those are great places to drop into and find health and healing.
I love it. That's excellent. And I love the identity piece because I'm going to tell you, Brandon, this is something that I run into more in my job as a peer and more just in my life in general, because a lot of I have a lot of friends and colleagues that have mental illness. That is the biggest piece, is the identity. It is the moment I was diagnosed with a mental illness, identity gone. I don't deserve love. I don't deserve a good life. I don't deserve all that just because of the mental illness. So that's where the stigma piece, you know, we have just got to break the heck out of it, just because it, you know, we did not lose our identity with our mental illness. It just became part of who we are. It's not who we are.
Absolutely. You're still Chrissy. I'm still Brandon. We just happen to have some extra stuff to deal with.
Exactly. So we have about 2.5 minutes left. Quickly, tell us your vision for My Quiet Cave, and then any information you want to leave with us so we can find out more about that and about you would be great.
Yeah. So My Quiet Cave, we're launching cave groups in Overcome actually throughout different areas in the nation. We just launched our first group in Nashville. We're launching them all throughout Denver. There's a couple other sites we're looking at launching as well, because we're looking at changing the idea that mental illness is a bad thing in churches and actually helping the church be an advocate in mental illness in general. If anyone wants any more information about any of this stuff, you can check out our website, myquietcave.com. My like mine, quiet like silent, and cave like where a bear would live, .com.
Okay.
And you can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at My Quiet Cave. And that's where you can find out about some of the new things going on and all of the groups and things that we're doing. If anyone wants to connect and they're interested in doing anything with My Quiet Cave, you can also reach out to me at brandon@myquietcave.org.
Okay. Well, Brandon, I would love to invite you to come back on the show sometimes, because religion and mental illness is something that I love to talk about, and I actually have a co-host that loves to talk about it too, just from my own personal background with it. So I'd love to invite you sometime back onto the show to talk about, you know, church and mental illness and your opinion and how you're just kind of driving through all that and change in the world. So I just wanted to extend that to you, and also to thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Thank you for coming on today, and thank you for being an advocate for all of those who are not able to speak up yet.
Well, thank you so much, Chrissy, and thank you for having me on. I've really appreciated the time, and keep up the amazing work that you're doing as well.
Thank you, and you're welcome. And to my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I will post information about My Quiet Cave and Brandon on my Facebook page at Mental Illness Matters. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I hope you have a great week. I will be doing a show tomorrow with a co-host. We're going to be talking about some of the symptoms of addiction that aren't always talked about, like lying and cheating and stealing and things that go along with it that people don't want to talk about. We're going to break it down tomorrow with Margaret Sisson. Thank you for joining me at Mental Illness Matters. We're changing the way everyone views mental illness, one personal story at a time. Have a great week.